In verse 1, we already touched on it. We see Joshua's high regard for Moses. This book was written by Joshua. What does Joshua call Moses in verse 1? Moses. Now it came about after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord. Joshua refers to Moses in the book of Joshua by that title 17 times. Moses, the servant of the Lord. Now the Lord referred to Moses as my servant and all that, and Joshua picked up on it. Joshua understood that Moses was absolutely 100% dedicated as the servant of the Lord. So then look how Joshua describes himself. Now it came about after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses's assistant. The NASB translates it servant, but they don't make many mistakes in my opinion, but this one they did. It is not the word servant, it's assistant. So when Joshua spoke about himself, he wouldn't even use the word servant that Moses was given. He says, I'm just the assistant to the servant of the Lord. I'm just the assistant. That's how Joshua wrote about himself. So most of your other translations got that right. You have the word assistant and aid, I believe, and some other words like that. So Joshua had a really high regard for Moses. And Joshua, we already talked about his zeal for the Lord, or we saw it once. Those three references, I'm going to give you three references to write, those three bullet points. 7, 9, chapter 7, verse 9. The second one is chapter 3, verse 10. And the third one is chapter 7, verse 19. Here's what they say. Chapter 7, 9 came about after the defeat at Ai. And Joshua falls on his face to the Lord and prays. And one of the things he says is, what will you do for your great name, Lord? All the nations are going to hear that we have been defeated and we've run. And it's not about the defeat with Joshua. It's about what will you do for your great name, Lord? And when he confronts Achan about the sin, he says to... let's come back to that one. Chapter 3, verse 10, the children of Israel are about to cross the Jordan River, and he starts with these words, by this you will know that the living God is among you. Because he knows that the Jordan is about to part for the people to walk across. And he says, I want you people to know that the living God is among you. And then the third bullet point is 7:19 to Achan. My son, give glory to the Lord. Tell us what you did. Give praise to him. Tell me what you have done that brought about this defeat, why you were selected. What was central in Joshua's mind? The glory of the Lord. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. Joshua never, you read the pages with a fine-tooth comb, and you never see Joshua inserting himself in any place of superiority. He was a powerful man, commander of this army. He brought the children in. That was no small feat, right? Look how it tried Moses. He brought them in with the Lord's power. He brought that unwieldy group in, and so he's very powerful, but he's very, very, very humble. It was all about the Lord. You don't find those qualities in a man very often, where he's humble but very powerful, where he's all about the Lord and he's powerful, do you? But we do in Joshua. So what was the outcome of Joshua's life service? Like I said, he brought Israel into the promised land per the Lord's direction. He had a part in fulfilling God's promises to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and all of their descendants that it would happen. And Joshua had a part in bringing that about. In chapter 24, 31, we read these words, "Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua and the elders who survived Joshua and had known or seen all the deeds of the Lord." What does that tell us about Joshua? The man had great influence on his people. He's the one that said, "Choose you this day who you'll serve. As for me and my house, we're serving the Lord." And it doesn't look like he had a lot of patience with the Achans, does he? By the Lord's direction. He had a lot of influence. The people that were under his influence, they followed the Lord their whole lives. How often do we see that in the pages of the Bible? We see some good kings, and they had some good influence. Usually we see the bad kings having the bad influence. Sometimes we see a king who went bad. Boy, well, here Joshua, the outcome was this. In the final verses of the book, Joshua is dead, and some other writer takes up the closing, and he says, I'm going to read it for you. "And it came about after these things that Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110. Somebody else came along and said, "No, he was the servant of the Lord, just like Moses. He deserves that title also." Do you think there could be any greater joy to a man like Joshua to have been given the same words as his mentor, Moses, to have been ascribed those by people who saw how he lived, how he moved, how he led, how he was not duplicitous in any way in his personal life? Man, that would have been amazing. And so that's how somebody else. So let's draw a few conclusions about the man. From what you saw earlier, he was a man who had a very clear understanding about what it is to be a servant. You know, we can talk about it all we want, but here's a man who had a very clear understanding of what being a servant is. He knew that he wasn't the top dog, and he didn't have a problem with that, did he? He never contested it. He didn't fudge. He didn't have a secondary ambition going on. He understood what it was to be a servant, and he just did do what he needed to do. He was a powerful man, but a humble man. Joshua was a man who understood, in addition to being a servant, he understood obedience. Obedience to his superiors, whether his superior was Moses or the Lord. He understood obedience, and his obedience was remarkable. I gave you just a few instances, but the book is full of them. It goes like this, and the Lord says this, then Joshua commanded the people, and God said to do this, and Joshua did so, and on and on and on, over and over, using different phrases at all of that. He just always did. He just always obeyed whatever the Lord said. Never the slightest hesitation. He never questioned the Lord. He was, in fact, exacting in his obedience. That's a phrase I would write down. He was exacting in his obedience. He was careful in his obedience. He just didn't waver. He didn't take liberties, I said earlier. He didn't interpret them. He didn't do most of what the Lord told him to do. He was careful in his obedience. He was zealous for God's glory. And in crisis, we saw that he goes straight to the Lord, falls on his face. And then as we come to the final pages of his life, we realize, in addition to what it said in Numbers, that Jonathan was a man whose whole life was one of unwavering devotion to the Lord. His whole life, unwavering devotion. How often of us is that said? There weren't any lapses, no hiccups, No rabbit trails, no lost years sowing the wild oats. He followed the Lord fully, wholly. Joshua is just an incredible guy. And I think, Barb, if we had another kid, I'd be pushing for that name for that kid. What do you think?
Grandchild?
Okay. And friends, that's the man who said, "What has my Lord to say to his servant?" Let's unpack those words a little bit. Turn to chapter 5, verse 13. Let me give you the run-up. What's going down? They've already crossed the Jordan. And when they crossed the Jordan, they happened to be near what city? Jericho. And so they've camped nearby, and it appears that Joshua has gone out on a scouting trip, because we read in verse 13 that he was by Jericho. And makes sense that he would go take a scouting trip over there. He's been told to be strong and courageous and give this people possession of this land. So, okay, we're here. There's Jericho. Might as well start with this one, right? So he goes over there and he's standing there looking at Jericho. And what does he see? What do you see, folks? He sees this walled city. And how had they described the cities? They have walls reaching to heaven. How high were these walls? We know that they were so high that when the spies were let out of a window on the wall, they had to be let on a roof too high to jump. So that had some height. And then whatever window was there, there was more above the window. And then there was the roof up there. And so these are high walls, and they're thick walls, thick enough to have houses within the walls. And of course, what else they used the walls for was the troops could run around on top, you know. And we don't know about this city, but I think Nineveh, we read, it was wide enough for three chariots to ride abreast around that wall. Well, you make a wall really wide, and you make it really tall, and you have good protection, right? And we also read that that Jericho was locked up tight like a vault. Nobody came in and no one went out because of these 2 million people that are camped right outside. Don't go out there. Don't let anybody in. We already know the two spies got in and we couldn't catch them. Don't anybody open that door. It's locked up tight as a drum. So you're Joshua and you're standing there looking at Jericho and you're going, how are we going to do this thing? I mean, look at those walls. And you get too close, of course, they shoot at you from on top, right? Or pour stuff on you, or throw rocks, or all those kinds of things. They weren't... What kind of battering rams are we going to... Joshua seems to be scouting the thing out. And that's where we pick up the intro to this. Now, it came about, verse 13, when Joshua was by Jericho, they lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. What did Joshua do? Well, he went right up to him. Joshua, you go, dude. Yes, sir. A man holding the sword, and he went right up to him. So I think the sword was a lot like this one, don't you? No, not a bit. Sam, would you come up here and help me?
Careful, Sam. Careful.
Take your jacket off. Like I said, don't fall out, Sam.
Come up.
So, Joshua sees this man standing there with his sword drawn. Sword drawn. That's all this is written for us to know about it. What do you think that looks like? Yeah, that's what I think. And he's looking straight at him, and Joshua says to him, and he comes up to him. So I kind of imagine Joshua had one of his own too, right? And he comes up to him and says, are you for us or for our adversaries? Man, Joshua, you go, buddy. Look at you. not backing down. I mean, Joshua actually has been a battle commander his whole life, his whole adult life. And so here's somebody. They're all locked up. What's this? So he goes up. Are you for us or for our adversaries? And a man says, verse 14, no. Some of your translations say neither. They missed it. It's the word no. Wait a minute, that's not what I asked. That wasn't one of the options. Are you for us or are for adversaries? And the man says, no. I come now as the commander of the armies of the Lord. And at that, Joshua falls on his face. Now, this is not a safe position, is it? In front of a man with a drawn sword. But actually, it's the only safe position when it's the commander of the Lord's army. And he falls on his face to the Lord, to this commander. And he says, all of a sudden he realizes, I asked the wrong question. And now he asks the right question. What has my Lord to say to his servant? And the first thing the commander said was, remove your sandals from your feet, for the place is holy. How does Joshua, with his face to the ground, daring not look up, get his sandals off? It doesn't tell us, but it just says again, and Joshua did so. I bet he did, don't you? Have you ever asked the wrong question of the Lord? Lord, why haven't you been coming through for me? How come I haven't had an opportunity like that? How come I'm still barely scraping by? Why haven't you? What has my Lord to say to his servant?